We have more Korean baseball for you tomorrow morning at 5:25 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. You will see the Samsung Lions taking on the Lotte Giants. That's tomorrow morning. All right, so our friend and colleague Matt Barry, who loves golf, had a very fun tweet over the weekend. He tweeted, "Good morning. Tony Soprano shows up to your door with a crew and says, 'Your life depends on it. You have to choose. Play Amen Corner at one under or get an outfield base hit off Gerrit Cole. What's your choice to survive Soprano?'" And to be clear, for those who are not aware, Amen Corner is the 11th, 12th, and 13th holes on the back nine at Augusta National, where they play the Masters, which is where the water really starts to come into play. So I got Twelman here because, Twelman, you had, give the credentials here. Who played soccer? Excuse me. You played soccer. Who played Major League Baseball and who played golf in your family?
My grandfather on my mom's side won two World Series with the Yankees, and then his son, my mom's younger brother, played on the PGA Tour for 19, 20 years.
Okay, so you've got
expertise. I'm the failure in the family, Greeny. Greeny, I'm the failure in the family.
Hardly. You've got expertise in both fronts. I've seen you play golf. Which of these would you do? If your life depends on it, which of these are you taking a shot at?
Well, Greeny, there's two ways to look at this. The first one, right away I looked at it and said, you know, I could probably saw off a off-speed pitch into the outfield off of Cole. And then I started really thinking about it, and I said, well, anyone that knows me knows I'm going to go down swinging, no pun intended. If I'm going to die and it's over, I don't want to die in a batter's box. Like, who cares? Like Cole threw me 96 miles an hour. I miss that. And then I lose on two breaking balls. Like, I don't want to go down there. I want to go down double bogeying Amen Corner, knowing that I died at Amen Corner. Like, that's how I'm looking at this. So all day, every day, give me Amen Corner. And you know what? It was fun. I was one over through Amen Corner, and nice knowing you, Greeny.
I agree with you. It's not really fulfilling the premise of the question. But if you were to give me the option of where I could die under any circumstances, I think I would take the 12th at Augusta. Right? I mean, there's a lot worse places you could die than that. But I would definitely take the golf piece of it. We got to have a fighting chance. I'm telling you right now.
We're actually winning if we die at Amen Corner.
I have seen, I have played golf with Twelman. I'm telling you right now, I would choose to allow you to play for my life to go one under at Amen Corner. That's what I would do. I would hand you my bag
and I would
say
do that
do
for sure.
What's that?
I would, but I would 100% hook it into the woods right off the first tee, just so you knew that you had to enjoy the next 2.5 holes and you can enjoy it for what
that's
it is.
And then Tony's going to be waiting for me on 13. All right, well done, Twelman. We'll catch you back here as we continue a very busy morning. Big hour coming up. Let's go. Roll it. Time to get up with the match. A day that promised to be fun and raise a lot of money exceeded all expectations on all fronts. We've got the insight. Then they're close to making it official. The NBA coming back. We got the one thing they could do that could genuinely make it better than it was before. And there's one move that could still be made that could change the entire landscape of the NFC. What are the chances that it will? You'll find out in this hour of Get Up, starting right now with Get Up and Go. No, let's start with the match. After a rough start in the rain at the match, Champions for Charity, Tom Brady. This might have been the most surprising great golf shot ever hit. As his mic pack flew off behind him, having just shanked a chip, Tom Brady spun one back on a string for a birdie on the par 5 seventh yesterday at Medalist. Phil Mickelson was more surprised than he's ever been in his life. Peyton couldn't believe it. It was a remarkable day in every way, and I give nothing but respect to all of the players who were involved. And Brady, who was taking a lot of junk from Charles Barkley all day long, tweeted after it was over, "I thought this was Champions for Charity, Chuck, so leave it to Brady to get the final word." It was an outstanding day. We'll have full highlights coming up a little later in this hour. Now to Get Up and Go, which is brought to you by SiriusXM. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said yesterday professional teams in the state can return to their facilities to resume training. Cuomo also stated he believes games can be played in the state without fans. The Nets will open their training center on Tuesday. Meanwhile, today marks the beginning of a pivotal week in negotiations for baseball. Jeff Passan reporting the league is expected to send their long-awaited economic plan to the players in the next few days. There are still reportedly fundamental disagreements between the two sides on money. We'll see if it ultimately winds up coming down to that. Elsewhere, Japan's professional baseball league will resume play on June 19th, nearly 3 months after it was supposed to have started. Just like in South Korea and Taiwan, fans will not be allowed to attend the games. And NASCAR racing went deep into the night at the Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte, the longest race of the NASCAR season. The race was held without fans. It would need overtime after a late caution, and Brad Keselowski came away with his first win of the season. And then to the NBA, which is our top story this morning, really, because they've begun exploratory conversations with Disney about holding the remainder of the season at the Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. The league has set a Board of Governors call for this Friday. Adrian Wojnarowski joined us an hour ago.
Teams expect the league to tell them to start recalling their players as soon as next week, and there'll be a two-week quarantine back in markets. Some teams might go directly to Disney to start training or somewhere in between. But the league has started to not only put the plans in place for a return in terms of testing and safety health-wise, but really digging this week into what that format is going to look like.
And I think to the basketball fan, that's obviously the most important piece of this. What is it going to look like when it comes back? Big Perk is still with us, and Brian Windhorst joins us this morning as well. And Windy, you and I have talked about this many times. The NBA has long, I think, flirted with the idea of doing away with the conferences when it gets to the playoffs and just seeding the teams 1 through 16, and travel has been the reason they can't. Is this the opportunity to try it?
Yeah, so over the next 4 days, Greeny, there's going to be a lot of backroom haggling to try to figure out what they're going to present to the owners on Friday. And one of the things I think that is really going to come out of this, I really think there's a good chance this is only going to be a 16-team playoff. And if that is the case, it opens up the possibility for something that Adam Silver has long wanted, which is to seed 1 through 16 in the postseason and go that route. There's no excuse with travel or anything like that. It would have to pass an owner vote, and that means a bunch of Eastern Conference owners would have to agree to it. But if there's a way to make this interesting and spice this up and potentially test out this theory, you're never going to get a better opportunity if that's the direction they go.
I agree. And Big Perk, I'd like to get your take on this because you played on really good teams in both conferences. Do you think that, look, that would be, it's easy for Windy and I to sit here and say this is a great idea. I happen to love it. But it also was doing away with basically the entire history of the sport as a player. Do you think the players would be in favor of it, considering how enormous the change would be?
Absolutely, Greeny. I mean, when you think about the history of it, think about how many times, like in the Western Conference, where teams had a better record than most teams in the East and they didn't make the playoffs. So I think it would make it fair. And I think teams, you would look at changing that East being weak narrative. And I think it would be great for the league because now you have the 16 most best teams instead of the conferences. And I think it would be best for the league because now teams that are deserving to be in will be there. Because it was so many times, especially when I was playing in the Western Conference, where that 9th, 10th, and 11th spot were better. And if they were in the East, they would be in the 5th or 4th slot. So I think change is better. It's almost like, you know, Greeny, I'm from the country. So it's almost like me having collard greens and then adding them ham hocks to the collard greens. It brings a different flavor and a different dynamic to it because you know I love to eat. So I think the change will be great and okay. Is needed.
I like it, and I like the analogy to it as well. Windy, it's a different level to it now. Let's make sure he's talking about literally putting the 16 best teams in the playoffs. You and I think we're talking about the idea of taking the two eights and then seeding them 1 through 16. But in the long run, I like his idea, too. In the long run, could we be seeing the beginning of what would be changes to the NBA as we have long known it?
Not in that way, because here's the thing. Any major change like this to the NBA would require 20 votes from the owners, 20 of 30 votes. And you're just not getting five Eastern Conference owners to vote the opportunity for them not to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they would do that this year. I'm saying 1 through 16 of the teams that have qualified for the playoffs. I think you're going to always be guaranteed to get 8 from each conference, Perk. But I will say this. I still think it's going to be a hard pass. I mean, it's something that they're going to try to get. But if you're Milwaukee, why would you vote for it this year? You might have to beat both the Clippers and the Lakers to win your title. If you're Boston, you're now a 5 seed. If you're Philadelphia, you're now a 12 seed. And what do you think the Brooklyn Nets would vote for? The Brooklyn Nets, if they did 1 through 16, you want to talk about a delicious storyline? they would open up by playing the Lakers in a series. Now, I know that Woj just said Kevin Durant's not coming back, but think about that for a second. So I still think the stumbling block is the fact that you'd need the East owners to do it. But if you're ever going to do it, and you could get them, convince them to sign in a one-off situation, it would be in this moment. And all of this stuff is getting haggled out behind the scenes. Right now, everything is still on the table. 30 teams are still on the table. But the more people I talk to, the more people in the league think that it's going to end up being a playoffs-only scenario. And to spice it up, this is something I think Adam Silver is going to bring to the table.
Big fella, you talk to so many players with a variety of different things that you're doing right now. What are you hearing from the guys as this is starting to feel real now? It's one thing to say, yes, we'd like to come back and play. Now it's starting to feel like it's time where they're going to be traveling to their markets, they're going to be quarantining, they're going to be getting in shape. And then if it goes the way we expect it to, everybody's going to Disney World to start playing. What are you hearing from the players right now, Kendrick Perkins?
Well, right now I'm hearing that the guys are excited. Hey, Greeny, they had this old saying that says you never know what you got until it's gone. And I think guys realize that when we went through this pandemic, you know, we grew up as basketball players, the love for the game. So guys want to get back to playing. And when you look at older guys like, you know, guys that are 30 plus, they know their window of opportunity is small. So they can't take a year for granted or miss a year out on trying to win a title. Like when that window is small, like a LeBron James, James Harden, or Russell Westbrook, that are all over their 30s and they got a great chance at winning a title, they got to make sure that they able to capitalize on it. So from what I'm hearing, guys are excited and they're ready to get back to work and get back to playing basketball.
Yes, and the messaging from the players has been almost exclusively that, which is in such stark contrast to what we've heard from the baseball players, which is such an interesting side to this to me. Very quickly, Wendy, is it your expectation they'll bring everybody back if they're just going to – if essentially we're just trying to figure out a way to get to the playoffs as quickly as possible, do they bring all 30 teams back or do they just bring some – moderated version of that to get to a postseason?
Technically, that's still under discussion. The GMs are going to have a call this week before the owners to hash that out, their opinion. But it is cheaper, safer, and shorter to do the playoff teams. And that is where I would guess that it's going to go. Not a done deal. That's where I, knowing what I know, would guess that it's going to end up.
Me too. And finally, one thing. Cindy, leave the one shot there on Wendy. I'm ad-libbing this. Wendy, make the face you made when Tom Brady spun that shot back in on 7 yesterday.
It's not the face, Greeny. I screamed. I screamed. It was one of the most stunning shots. I tell you one thing. My reaction was a heck of a lot more, you know, amazing than his reaction. He acted as if he had just tapped in a 5-footer.
I agree.
I mean, I submit it was the first time in the history of golf that somebody has shanked a chip and then spun a shot. Not just hold the shot. Anybody can hit a line drive that hits a flag stick. He spun it back into the cup the next hole with a split in his pants. I say that's never happened in the history of the game of golf.
It was in its own way one of the most amazing golf shots I've ever seen hit in the entire history of the sport. Wendy, thank you very much. We've got much more to do in this hour. Coming up, it's been 7 years since the Seahawks won their only Super Bowl. There was one addition that could help Russell Wilson get to another. We'll tell you what it is and why they probably won't do it. Coming up, and then at 53, Mike Tyson is training like he's going to fight again. How much money would it take to get Marcus in a ring with him? We'll talk about that and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
What does Swagoo say?
G, you know what I say? I say Daniel Jones is a gangster.
He lying, G.
Look at me today, G. I'm already a beast, so we just gonna be beastie. I call you bro.
Yes.
You are my bro. Are you crying, son?
This is not exactly how I meant for this to go.
Take that and smoke it.
Nothing more fun than Swagoo Says, where you will hear from people around the world of sports, and Marcus will tell you what they really meant. And it's going to start with this. Former heavyweight champion Mike Tyson posted a new video of himself working out, throwing punches. Looks good. He was recently on Lil Wayne's Young Money radio show and said he will have a contract this week for his first opponent in his boxing comeback. Teddy Atlas, meanwhile, was on SportsCenter over the weekend, was asked, how much money should someone take a hit from Tyson?
Well, as much as you can get, and definitely more than your insurance covers. That would be a good start.
That's what Teddy says. What does Swagoo say?
Let me paraphrase that for Teddy. Teddy is basically saying, in case you don't wake up from that long nap that you're going to take, after Mike Tyson busts your chin wide open, you need to have enough money in your insurance to take care of your family in case you sleep forever. That's it, G.
Could you
That's
do
what
it?
He's saying.
Would you do it? Is there an amount of money that would get you in a ring with Mike Tyson?
Hell no. I done seen Mike Tyson knock people equilibrium off, and they still ain't got up. The dude still ain't got up from the punch. I don't know. Listen, G, on a serious note, I don't know if Tyson hit you the right way if you ever come back the right way, or like you were before you took that jab.
Yeah. Can he actually fight again is the question I'm interested to ask. We're going to get Max in here on that a little bit later. All right, let's go to the next one. It involves Bears running back Tariq Cohen. He was on First Take Friday with some insight into the mindset of quarterback Mitch Trubisky. Here's what he said.
I really feel like it's a number of things with our offense. We're young. I feel like we wasn't really clicking well, and we really didn't, help him a lot at times. But I feel like, once he gets that confidence about himself and once he gets, out of his own head and he has that effort mentality, I feel like that's when we see the best of him.
That's what Tariq Cohen says. What does Swagoo say?
Man, Mitch out here lacking confidence. He wants y'all to turn the TVs off during the season so he could be in a better mindset. And, you got to throw in there because they tell you in media you're always supposed to couple yourself with your teammate and not single him out. All that being said, what Tariq is saying, G, is Mitch Trubisky was cool, but Nick Foles going to be our quarterback. Mm.
I agree. I think that's what he's saying as well. It's not the direction I think it's going to go, but I think it's the direction that Tariq Cohen is pointing to. One more, and this one is really interesting. According to a report from our old friend John Clayton, sources said Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson would love to add Antonio Brown in Seattle. Mm. Here's what Stephen A. thinks will happen if that takes place.
If the Seattle Seahawks get their hands on Antonio Brown, there is no reason to deny that the Kansas City Chiefs and the Seattle Seahawks are going to be the favorites to be in the Super Bowl. Period. I mean, my Lord. You're talking about an elite offensive crew, okay, that definitely, as far as I'm concerned, I would favor them over the San Francisco 49ers to come out of the NFC. That's how elite Antonio Brown is as a player.
And they were a yard away from the one seed last year. Swagoo, that's what he says. What do you say?
I love to disagree with the big bro, Stephen A., but he's telling the truth. And basically what he's saying, G, and something that's hard for me to admit, offense win damn championships now. So when you add AB, like we saw him added to the Patriots, immediately he made a difference, scored a touchdown. AB might be the only dude in the world that can come off the streets and score touchdowns and then go back to not scoring touchdowns and being out of the league and then come back and make somebody a Super Bowl contender. The dude really is that good. So to Stephen A's point, like paraphrasing, offense win championships now.
I think that's really interesting. And as I bring Tim Hasselbeck in here, I will point out that in the reporting, John does not suggest this is imminent. He says if it happens, it's something that wouldn't happen till deeply into the summer. Mm-hmm. He also points out that there was a close relationship between Geno Smith, who was the backup quarterback in Seattle, and Antonio Brown. However, that figures into this. Tim Hasselbeck, what would you think, all other things being equal, mm-hmm. and we know that they aren't, of Antonio Brown on the field with Russell Wilson in Seattle?
Well, listen, I think in terms of them being a favorite in the NFC, I would look at the Saints as a team that would maybe be comparable. But, yeah, you could easily make the argument that they would be the favorite. Think about what they did last year with a group of wide receivers that really nobody was sure about. You know, they get the Doug Baldwin news kind of last year in the offseason that he's not going to be around. And so you have a rookie in DK Metcalf who has a great season. Tyler Lockett, when he was healthy, you know, played well. And Russell Wilson throws 31 touchdowns and 5 picks. Throws for over 4,000 yards. Now get him Antonio Brown and, you know, Greg Olsen there now. I just think offensively, you know, we probably don't give Russell Wilson the credit he deserves. I think they would be an absolute beast. And then when you look at them defensively, they always do a good job competing under Pete Carroll. So, yeah, I think it would change the dynamic of how we look at NFC teams if they had a top flight receiver like that to support Russell Wilson.
Yes, but the dynamic in the locker room then, of course, would become a huge question. And how do you manage what has become an unmanageable personality? Marcus, could they do that?
Gee, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this. And obviously we've had this discussion about Antonio Brown. But I kind of see it with Pete Carroll. Based on what players, the players that have played for Pete Carroll, what I've heard and people have talked about, he allows you that opportunity to be yourself. Now, obviously, AB has to make individual changes and he has to make decisions based on what's best for everybody else around him. But with that being said, if I looked in the NFL and you were to ask me, give me a number of coaches that can deal with guys that are different. We'll leave it at that. Pete Carroll would be one of those names in that list of guys that can kind of get on dudes' levels and relate to them because that's what I've heard from his players.
What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think Marcus is right. I think Pete has always had a good way with certain players, trying to kind of give them leeway, get the most out of them. You know, at the same time, keep them in check. I think Russell Wilson's obviously a very good leader who, you know, can kind of help in that regard. But yeah, I think that probably the bigger issue is like, what's his standing, you know, inside the league? You know, what does the commissioner's office think of, you know, Antonio Brown and his situation? So, look, I think in fairness to you know, John and what he's putting out there, and Greeny, you're right to point it out. It's not like this is necessarily likely or right around the corner. But if it were to happen and we're going to play that game this time of year, it would make them so much better.
Yeah. You know, Marcus, I'm taking this from your notes of yesterday, but could Pete Carroll be to Antonio Brown, again, the circumstances are not exactly the same, what Phil Jackson was to Dennis Rodman, a very different personality. We all just sat and watched it, who needed to be handled a different way. Marcus, I'll give you 30 seconds here. Is that a legitimate comparison in your mind?
To me, it's a legitimate comparison, G. If you think about the zenness, for the lack of a better term, of Pete Carroll, there are similarities to what we watch Phil Jackson do with his team and Dennis in particular, and being aware of what this guy needed differently than everybody else. And that's a possibility with Pete. He's been in that environment. I would be super interested to see how that relationship would develop over time. I think Pete would figure it out, though.
Yeah, the football piece of it makes all the sense in the world. But then again, with Antonio Brown, the football piece has never been the problem. All right, we will continue our look back, by the way, at some of the most memorable Monday Night Football games tonight with a game from Week 5 of the 2015 season. It was Steelers-Chargers. It was Michael Vick's last full game. It came down to the final play. You'll see it at 8 Eastern tonight on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Coming up, if LeBron, Zion, and the rest of the NBA are going to finish this season, they might do it in a very small world. We will explain in a moment. Get up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Welcome back to Get Up, and we get back to the match. Champions for Charity, which raised $20 million yesterday. These four legendary athletes all competing on a very rainy day at the Medalist in Florida. Most of Tom Brady's day looked like that. He was really struggling the entirety of the day, and it led to a lot of people out there sort of kicking dirt on him. Brooks Koepka tweeting, I'll donate $100,000 if Brady makes a par on the front nine. Sean Payton, coaching in the division, tweeted, I'm liking this Florida Tom Brady right now. J.J. Watt tweeting, Tom has to be a couple of seconds from a club toss. All that was fun and games. Charles Barkley was also piling on, and Brady was having none of that.
Come on, man. I'm going to give you some shots, man. I want
all
some
right.
of you.
Got to get going.
Chuck, I've been focusing on football, bro.
And then Tom Brady said, you know what? I'm just going to silence everybody. And as his mic pack flew off the back of his pants in a rainstorm, he hits the most shocking great golf shot I've ever seen. This was one hole after he shanked a chip shot. You just saw that one on six. And now he did this on seven, which was unbelievable. And he was absolutely letting everybody know.
Shut your mouth, Chuck.
Unreal.
Okay. Take a look at that medicine.
It was awesome. By the way, he split his pants retrieving his ball. It was a day that had everything. And the truth is, it actually had great intrigue on the back nine. They played alternate shot. It was great fun to watch. Look at the shot Peyton Manning hits on a par three. Look how close that is. Look how close the other balls are. Tiger was the furthest from the hole. It turned out to be a spectacular day. In the end, it came down to this. Tiger and Peyton were one up on 18. Tiger just needs to snuggle that one up close, and that he does to hold on for a one-up win on a day that genuinely exceeded expectation for fun, for competitiveness, for everything you could have possibly wanted, and most importantly, for the $20 million that those four guys raised. And I bring Max Kellerman in here this morning. He's a half hour away from First Take. And Max, golf I know is not necessarily your first love. What was your primary takeaway from what we saw yesterday?
Well, first I have to say that before I play the bad guy here, Mike, they raised $20 million. That's the important thing. They had a lot of fun, and people like you did too, and it exceeded expectations. And Brady, just when he was getting killed, comes up in the clutch, and it's competitive and all that. Oh, there's Tiger Woods. There's Tom Brady. I get it. And you know, but honestly, whatever my level of interest in golf, I would say that if this had taken place between or before Ferguson and Gaethje, before a couple of UFC events, I would have been much more into it. The fact is, like when we were talking about, hey, we're gonna air Horse. Remember that a couple months ago?
Sure.
That was news. Anything to watch. Since then, we've actually seen real sporting events. This was not that. This was a celebrity party. And so I'm glad, Greeny, that you enjoyed it. It was not riveting for me.
I enjoyed it very much. And I'm going to point out something that I think you will find interesting. And maybe riveting would be too strong a word. But I think we saw a little glimpse into the psychology of a great player like Tom Brady yesterday. Because what I tweeted when he was, listen, on the front nine, he was playing golf about as badly as the game can be played. And what I tweeted was, he's at that point in a golf round now where jokes are not funny. And all of us who play the game know what that feels like. But he never went there. He never hung his head. He never sort of moped. He stayed very positive through the entire thing and kept believing that something good was going to happen. And I genuinely think that was a little glimpse. This isn't his game, and he isn't particularly good at it. And oh, by the way, for the last few months, while Peyton was probably practicing golf every minute, Brady has been trying to figure out how fast Cameron Brate runs on a high school field somewhere, so he clearly hasn't been practicing. I do think, Max, we saw a little glimpse into the psyche of the great one and how he sort of held it together through a moment that I would have thrown my entire golf bag into a pond.
Well, Mike, you know I'm a fan of yours, but I don't know that comparing the GOAT to Mike Greenberg in terms of athletic competitive ability is necessarily the measuring stick. But I'll say this. Tom Brady is the GOAT, right? And he is not, like, when you watched him early in his career, you didn't get the sense you were watching Bird or Magic. In other words, not the most athletic guy, but a genius. You didn't get that sense from Tom Brady. You certainly didn't get the sense you were watching Michael Jordan, just athletically different, right? So how did he get to be the GOAT? You nailed it. He has a different level of competitive seriousness, and I think you captured it when you said he believes something good is going to happen. He never stops believing that, and it's working for him.
Yes, because I stopped believing not only that something good is going to happen for me when I play, I definitively didn't believe anything good was going to happen for him yesterday as I watched those first six holes, and then he pulls off the miracle. Okay, next order of business. Max, the NBA has begun exploratory conversations with Disney about holding the remainder of this season in late July at Disney's ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Orlando. The league has a board of governors call set for Friday, which is expected to provide additional details for teams on plans. It's a really interesting little question that I have here, and Marcus will join this as well. Max, we've been talking here this morning. I have long supported the idea of doing away with the conference structure in the NBA playoffs because it's become so one-sided in recent years and just seeding the teams 1 through 16 and playing it out from there. They could obviously do it now because travel is not a consideration, but it would be doing away with basically 70 years of history. Which side of that argument do you fall on?
If you want to try that, I know why you say now. You might as well try everything now because there's going to be an asterisk. There'll be excuses no matter what happens if, in fact, the NBA is able to complete the season, meaning the postseason, and crown a champion this year. So I understand the argument. Actually, for a play-in game, I understand the argument because the eighth seed, the seventh seed, ain't going to win the chip. Although in funky years, funky things can happen like the eighth seed Knicks in 99 getting to the finals. So I'm for that. I think it would add to drama. Reseeding, I'm not as for, Mike. And the reason is this year you have real drama in the East and in the West. Bragging rights in the East and in the West. Clippers and Lakers. And but also just a deep conference. What's Houston going to do? Denver, Utah. It's the West is interesting, and you know what else? The East is interesting. Can the Freak actually get it together and get through that? Tatum, can he be the best player on a team that makes the finals? What can the Raptors do without Kawhi? I think there were interesting questions all season long that are specific to both conferences. So while I get the philosophy behind it, we might as well. First of all, it's unfair East-West. Frequently the West is stronger. Reseed the whole thing. And I get why you'd want to do it now. Here's the time to do it. I like the play-in. I don't like the idea of reseeding.
Yeah, another good reason to do it now is because travel considerations are usually the primary reason given against it, and now that obviously doesn't apply if they were all in the same place. Marcus, what do you think?
Well, it's different circumstances. I'm more prone to let's get the best 16 in there and figure out how that thing will play out. And I get it. I understand the argument that Max is making. But I also lean more towards what your thought process is on it, G, because, look, this is sport. Last year we watched the final where Golden State lost their whole team in the finals. And Kawhi and the Raptors were all obviously, they took advantage of that. Now, you don't put an asterisk by that because that's a part of the game. I think the playoffs bring out all of that. And basically what the playoffs are, and what's created the craziness and contentiousness about what happens in the playoff is that things happen. Dudes get injured. Dudes have off nights. Situations transpire throughout team dynamics that we see outside of the game of basketball, not necessarily on the floor, take place. And it creates all of this drama. I keep going back to the NCAA tournament. March Madness is my favorite sporting event to watch. When you start talking about chips on the line, schools we never heard of having an opportunity to come beat the Blue Bloods and play the one seed against the last team that anybody expected to be there, the George Masons of the world, the Loyola Chicagos of the world. Like, those are the things that we remember about sport. If we could get any simulation of that in pro sports, I think it'll be more exciting than anything else. Obviously, you want the best two teams because that creates a lot in the championship game or the championship series. But I think the drama that that would create with the best 16 would be more riveting than anything else.
All right, I got one more for you, Max, because everyone who knows you knows, of course, you are our preeminent voice on boxing. And there is this. Mike Tyson was on Lil Wayne's Young Money radio show and said that by the end of this week, he will have a contract to fight an opponent as he begins his boxing comeback. He added his opponent will not be Evander Holyfield, who himself has talked about possibly coming back and fighting again. Tyson is 53. Holyfield, I believe, is 57, Max. Should people want to see Mike Tyson get back in the ring and fight?
Look, a lot of people in boxing would say no. I'm not one of those people. I actually think they have old, you know, like they have an old timer circuit basically in some other sports, including one-on-one sports, especially Mike in golf. You have characters you've grown to love and you can watch them play even when they're not good enough to compete on a world-class level anymore. Now, boxing is different in the sense that you can get hurt. It's a hurt business. That's the point, in fact. You know, we talk about concussions in football, in the NFL. What are we going to do about them? In boxing, what are we going to do about them means how are we going to deliver them? That's the name of the game. And Mike Tyson was one of the great concussion deliverers of all time, but he is obviously 15 years ago, not good enough to beat second-rate heavyweights. So it depends how you match him. A lot of MMA guys are coming out now saying, Wanderlei Silva or whoever, hey, I'd like to fight Tyson. That's actually a good idea. You put a couple of guys who are older, even if they're not exactly the same age, who are way past their prime, who are around the same size, and who would give you a competitive fight. And I'm not against it. That's different than saying, like, I want to see Mike Tyson fight Tyson Fury. No, obviously not. But Mike Tyson against another guy, 210, 220 pounds, who's also over 45 years old. Yeah, it'd be fun to watch.
Marcus Spears, would you plunk down some of your hard-earned money to watch Mike Tyson fight right now?
100%, G. And listen, to Max's point, Max has taught me a lot about boxing, the deep dive into it. But the one thing that stands consistent for me in boxing, all it takes is one punch. And I believe Mike Tyson still got that one punch in him based off the things that I've been watching. It may not be as powerful. It may not be as forceful. But I'm telling you right now, at 53, myself, young dudes out there that's athletic and been training and all of that, if Tyson catch you on that button, you going to sleep. And that's what's going to happen. I don't care if he's 53, 33, 43. Mike Tyson still got that punch in him where he can catch you one time and it's night-night. So I'm with Max when you talk about him not being matched up in the fight that Max going to break down about the length and the reach and get into a real fight card. But one thing I know is that I would love nothing more than to see Mike Tyson put somebody to sleep.
But just really quickly, Max, I got 30 seconds here. No way he fights up a current world-class fighter, right? That's not a good idea in your mind at all.
No, he cannot fight a world-class fighter right now at his stage in his life. But you can match him right, and it would be a lot of fun. Again, there's always a chance someone gets hurt, Mike. This is boxing. And then it wouldn't be so fun if something bad happened for real. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, those are the risks involved. And who wouldn't want to see Mike Tyson in the ring?
All right, Max and Marcus coming up in 19 minutes for First Take here on ESPN. Great work, guys. Max, good to see you, my man. Thank you very much. Still to come here on our program, one of our experts says Dak Prescott should take what the Cowboys are offering right now. You'll hear why he said it and whether our guys agree or disagree as we continue. But first, a little sneaky Hembo moment here. This one's going to be for Tim Hasselbeck. Who was the first quarterback to beat Tom Brady in a playoff game? That's the question. The answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
You know what, I hate Twitter. Tweet this, you know, Facebook that.
Social media doesn't count at all. Twitter doesn't count at all.
I don't have internet, I don't have Twitter.
I don't read the damn paper, I don't read Twitter, I don't go on Facebook.
We're on Snapface there when we're talking about that.
The Twittiots, that's just how people are.
When you tweet all that stuff out, don't press in.
That frickin' Twitter, I'm sick of it.
Guess who joined that frickin' Twitter this weekend? Eli Manning. And his first tweet was, to paraphrase Jimmy Chitwood, I don't know if it'll make any change, but I figure it's time for me to start playing social media. He added a GIF from Hoosiers. His old sparring partner Tom Brady had some fun with it. He tweeted, welcome, Eli. In typical fashion, you never showed up until the fourth quarter anyway. So good fun with those guys. And then good fun with Tom Brady up against Eli's brother this weekend in golf. And that brings us to Sneaky Hembo for the morning. Who was the first quarterback to beat Tom Brady in a playoff game? Tim Hasselbeck, do you know the answer?
I'm guessing Ben Roethlisberger. I feel terrible about my guess, but I'm guessing Big Ben. He's trying to remember teams that were good back then.
He was trying to send you in the direction of Peyton.
How'd he do?
The actual answer is Jake Plummer. Jake Plummer was the first quarterback to beat Tom Brady in a playoff game in 2005. I think it was the mustache that put him over the top. Peyton Manning was the second. All right, well, I've got you here. Let's talk about a couple of other quarterback-related issues around the league. Tim, the clock continues to tick towards July 15th with the Cowboys and Dak Prescott have to work out a deal. On our show Friday, Rob Ninkovich said he thinks the delay is about more than just money.
Look, they know more about Dak than anybody. They see him every single day. They see him in practice. They see every single throw that he makes. So why haven't they paid him yet? Why have they not given him what he wants? Well, because they don't want to go out and pay top dollar for him, because there's some questions there. There's question marks. If they had no questions and they knew beyond doubt that, look, this is our guy, we're going to pay him the most of any quarterback in the NFL, I think it would already happen.
So we're on a couple of quarterback reads here with Tim Hasselbeck, and we'll start with that one. Have the Cowboys played this thing right with Dak Prescott's contract?
No, they haven't played it right. Really, what they should have done is they should have beat the Eagles in their deal with Wentz. They should have beat the Rams in their deal with Jared Goff. Get something done earlier when he was just so cash poor. Now he's looking at, you know, the franchise tag and then maybe a second year of the franchise tag. So your launching off point is 2 years, $70 million. So I just think they've waited too long. And by waiting and Dak playing well, it just cost them so much money. So, no, the Cowboys have not played this correctly.
Totally agree. Meanwhile, who will be the starting quarterback week one in Chicago, Trubisky or Foles?
I actually believe this is going to be Mitchell Trubisky. And I understand the excitement for Nick Foles. But, look, I think the situation for Trubisky is somewhat unfair in the sense that, you know, he's hurt last year playing through a torn labrum in his shoulder. I think that really affected the way he played. I don't think he was surrounded with very good talent a year ago. I do think they've upgraded the talent around him. And so I think that he actually does have the upper hand kind of going into camp, but I think he starts the season. I think both quarterbacks play, but I think he's the starter week one.
I agree with you completely. How about in New England? Who's the starter week one? Will it definitively be Jared Stidham?
Well, if the quarterback room stays the same, Greeny, then yeah, it's Jared Stidham. I think we know how the Patriots feel about Brian Hoyer. They've cut him multiple times. They, you know, in the trade for, you know, with Jimmy Garoppolo, they waited for the Niners to release Brian Hoyer. It tells you how they feel about Hoyer. I just don't think they're done addressing their quarterback room. So if it stays the same, yeah, it's Stidham. But if they keep addressing their quarterback room, it could be somebody else.
Well, so addressing the quarterback room, there's two ways to do that. One of those is a trade, and that could be literally anything. The other is Cam Newton, who remains a free agent. Is that what you mean when you say a change in the quarterback room?
That's 100% what I mean. And I'm not reporting that they're interested in him, but you know, if you just look how New England does it. They don't just basically say, okay, hey, you know what? You are going to be the starter now. We're just going to give you this starting job. They're going to make people earn it and compete for it. I just don't think they're going to have a second-year player in Jared Stidham, you know, compete with Brian Hoyer for the job. I think they would like some competition in that, you know, race there. And I think that Cam Newton is the perfect fit to come in, a guy who's accomplished and do just that.
Yes, I've always said I'm in the interesting business. Nothing more interesting could happen than if they gave that a shot with Cam Newton. I'd love to see it happen. Meanwhile, let's talk about the quarterback who was probably the best of them all, and that's Patrick Mahomes. He says he wants to be a Chief for life, coming off being the Super Bowl MVP. He's now likely to completely reset the quarterback market, and that could have an impact on other quarterbacks up for new deals around the NFL. And look, could we see a complete resetting of this? Well, four young, skilled quarterbacks will all become free agents within the next 1 to 3 years. Dak, we'll wait and see how that plays out as far as the franchise tag. You got Watson and Mahomes in 2022, and then Lamar Jackson either that year or the following, depending on his fifth-year option. So you're talking about spectacular young quarterbacks. We could see this thing getting reset regularly. Here's the question I'm always reluctant to ask because I feel the question gets twisted around. What should Patrick Mahomes be thinking as far as his next contract in Kansas City?
Well, he should be thinking that he's going to maximize his value. And so, you know, and I think you're careful with how you're wording that, because there's this mentality of, hey, should he take less so that they can put good players around him? That's not his job. His job is to play quarterback at a really high level, maximize his earning potential, and it is the club's job to do a good job by signing an undrafted free agent that can start at left guard for a decade, to find a wide receiver in the fifth round, a pass rusher in the third round. That's the team's job. That's not Patrick Mahomes' job. And so if you look at, you know, Mahomes' job, his agent's job, their job is to get the best deal possible. And it'd be a bad situation for either of them. You know, Mahomes knows that by resetting the quarterback market, it affects other quarterbacks. And it could affect him in the future. And for his agent, you know, he knows that, like, if he signs, you know, Mahomes signs kind of an under-market deal, it's going to get used against him in recruiting. So I just think that when you look at it, Mahomes' job is to play quarterback at a really high level and maximize his opportunity with that organization.
Yeah, Rod Mikovich said on this show on Friday that Tom Brady, consistently taking a little bit less money in New England made it easier for the Patriots to negotiate deals with other players, basically saying, look, he's not taking the maximum. Why would we pay you the maximum? And guys wanted to go there for the chance to play with him. I guess I'll just continue to point out the fact that if you rob from Peter to pay Paul, which is the way a hard cap system is, teams don't make it to the Super Bowl and win it. I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying they haven't. And maybe Mahomes will be the exception. But to this point, Tim, teams that pay the quarterback all the money they can don't make it to the Super Bowl.
Now, I understand that. And you look at, you know, how much, you know, of the salary cap these guys are they're eating up. But at the same time, like, you can't be concerned with that and just say, okay, so the team is going to get it right with where they spend the money elsewhere. Teams get it wrong with where they spend their money. So how about paying on the guy that you are for sure can play, which is Patrick Mahomes?
I get it. It's an argument that isn't going away. We'll see what these guys wind up getting. Timmy, thank you very much. Meanwhile, tomorrow it is our weekly flashback to some of baseball's most unforgettable games. And this week, this should do a very good rating in Chicago. Game 7 of the 2016 series, Indians-Cubs, extra innings. Cubs hadn't won since 08. You know the rest. It's tomorrow, 7 Eastern, on ESPN. Meanwhile, with news that the NBA could be moving closer to resuming their season, should they finish the regular year or go right to the playoffs? First Take answers that and more right after us on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Taco Bell. Order ahead and pick up your favorites at our contactless drive-thru. And finally, I just want to say that our show today is for all the men and women who serve our country in the armed forces and have served, for their families, and especially the families of those who gave their lives in pursuit of our freedom. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.